Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In the course of his unfinished work, The Pensées, Blaise Pascal has a long passage discussing the infinite, or rather two infinites, and how we human beings who can conceive of the infinitely great and the infinitesimally small, how we fit into that picture and what its implications are for our capacities to know the world and understand ourselves. He positions us between the infinitely large, what we typically understand as the infinite or infinity. And there he's thinking about it not just in terms of some sort of mathematical concept, but also the universe and its vastness itself. We'll come to that in a moment. And then he, you might say, wavers back and forth between the infinitesimal, the infinitely small, and nothing. Néant, rien in French. He tells us that we should reflect upon ourselves and understand where we fit in. So he says, let us contemplate the whole of nature in her full and grand majesty and turn our vision away from the low objects which surround us. So what is he talking about there? You know, there were a lot of not just mathematical and geometrical, but also astronomical and physical advances being made in Pascal's time, some of them by way of experiment, some of them by way of observation, some of them merely by theorizing. Some of those theories would turn out to be true, some of them would turn out to be false later, but a picture was now arising in which we human beings and the world that we inhabit is not at the center of the universe, rather, we're just one small bit of it. We're inhabiting one planet, and there may be a multitude of other worlds in the universe. So he says, let him gaze on that brilliant light set like an eternal lamp to illuminate the universe. Let the earth appear to him a point in comparison with the vast circle described by the sun. This is still a heliocentric model, but even this can give us that sense. Let him wonder at the fact that this vast circle is itself but a very fine point in comparison with that of the stars. And we can go on and on and on. He says the whole visible world, everything that we're seeing, everything that we inhabit, this planet that we live upon, that we think of as so incredibly vast, almost infinite ourselves, he says, is only an imperceptible atom in the ample bosom of nature. Then he tells us, no idea approaches it. We may enlarge our conceptions beyond all imaginable space. We only produce atoms in comparison with the reality of things. Our capacity to imagine what the universe must be like or could be like is rather weak and limited by comparison to what the universe does, in fact, turn out to be like. And here he uses this very interesting phrase that many people have picked up on. It is an infinite sphere, the center of which is everywhere, the circumference nowhere. So how do we turn out once we start engaging in this view from above or from elsewhere that tries to take in the totality of the universe? We wind up becoming almost not even like ants, but fleas or mites on ants. Fleas are actually pretty good size compared to ants, now that you think about it. But we become something that almost doesn't exist, that almost doesn't matter within this vast universe. So he says, returning to himself, let man consider what he is in comparison with all existence. Let him regard himself as lost in this remote corner of nature, from the little cell in which he finds himself lodged, I mean the universe, let him estimate at their true value all the things that we get so obsessed about. Not only ourselves, he says, but also the earth itself, kingdoms, cities. What is a human being, he asks, in the face of the infinite. So that's a troubling thought already, but it gets even more so by bringing in the other side. He says, let a mite, a tiny, tiny little arthropod, be given him with its minute body and parts incomparably more minute, limbs with their joints, veins in the limbs, blood in the veins, humors in the blood, drops in the humors, vapors in the drops, dividing these last things again. Let him exhaust his powers of conception. Let the last object at which he can arrive be now that of our discourse. And here he says, listen, some people think that there is, in fact, a smallest point in nature. You know, we have these atomists. There was a revival of this in the modern age under, you know, for example, Pierre Gassendi. And they thought that you could get to a smallest bit of matter. And Pascal says, I see within that even a new abyss. I will paint for him not only the visible universe, but all that he can conceive of nature's immensity in the womb of this abridged atom. Let him see an infinity of universes, each of which has its firmament, its planets, its earth in the same proportion as in the visible world, in each earth animals and in the last mites, in which he will find again all that the first had, finding still in these others. He goes on and on. Now, this is purely speculative, and this doesn't turn out to be the way that nature does work once we, you know, start using electron microscopes or whatever it is that 100 years from now we're going to have that goes even deeper. But it turns out that the infinitely small reveals an entire cosmos, a world, to us at each point. And he goes on and he says that what is the human being in nature? Now, it depends on which perspective we adopt. He says, by comparison to the infinitely large, we are a nothing. We barely exist at all. By comparison to the infinitely small, we are a world, a cosmos. You might pause to think for yourself about your own body and what we know of it at present, that you are an entire assemblage, very complexly organized, of all sorts of systems, which are themselves comprised of cells, which are in communication and circulation with each other in a myriad of different ways. But it goes even further. We now know, for example, that you are not just those organized systems of your own cells that came from, say, your own DNA and processes of reproduction. You're also colonies of bacteria, which can die off and be replaced by other bacteria. They exist all over your skin, within your gut. You are, in fact, to use, you know, Walt Whitman's famous phrase, multitudes. So which of these perspectives is correct? That's where it gets quite interesting. Both of them are correct. Both of them tell us what we are. And when we try to sort of intersect them together, it's almost dizzying. So he tells us we are a nothing in comparison with the infinite and all in comparison with the nothing. A mean, we are a middle place between nothing and everything. And here's where the upshot comes in. Since we are infinitely removed from comprehending the extremes, we can't understand the infinitesimal, we can't understand the infinite in terms of the physical universe. We can imagine it, but we can't comprehend it. He says, the end of things and the beginning are hopelessly hidden from him in an impenetrable secret. We're equally incapable of seeing the nothing from which we were made and the infinite in which we are swallowed up. So there's a sort of skeptical conclusion coming from this. And Pascal goes on and says, this is why we have gone wrong in trying to understand nature. He says, through failure to contemplate, not just to comprehend, which we're not actually capable of, but just to contemplate, to take into account these infinities, men have rashly rushed into the examination of nature as if they bore some proportion to her. We anthropomorphize nature and thereby get it wrong. So he goes on and he tells us that all of the sciences are infinite in the extent of their researches. So it's not just the physical world But also, when it comes down to it, the world of the mind, the mental world, the world of the spirit. He says, who doubts that geometry has an infinite infinity of problems to solve? They're also infinite in the multitude and fineness of their premises. Those which are put forward as ultimate are not actually self-supporting, but based on others, which, having others for their support, do not admit of finality. But we represent some as ultimate for a reason, in the same way as in regard to material objects. We call that indivisible point beyond which our senses can no longer perceive anything, though by its nature it is infinitely divisible. So what is he telling us about our own scientific endeavors, our ways of understanding not just the universe, but our place in it, and how we, in fact, make sense of it and approach it? Even when we turn to those things, we are positioned between these two infinities. We don't even know our own subject matters that are our own activities thoroughly at each end. He goes on and he says, we naturally believe ourselves far more capable of reaching the center of things than embracing their circumference, but we need no less capacity for attaining the nothing than the all. Infinite capacity, which we don't possess, of course, is required for both. And he says, it seems that whoever shall have understood the ultimate principles of being might also attain to the knowledge of the infinite. The one depends upon the other, and they each lead to each other. So what is the upshot going to be of this doctrine of the two infinities for somebody like Pascal? He says that we are something, we are not everything. The nature of our existence hides from us the knowledge of first beginnings, which are born of the nothing. The littleness of our being conceals from us the sight of the infinite, the infinitely great. So he tells us that we are limited in every way. We can understand the things that are in between much better than we can the great or the small. We only understand the things that fit our frame. He gives us a lot of examples here. Too much sound deafens us. Too much light dazzles us. Too much distance hinders our view. First principles, here's where something very interesting, are too self-evident for us. And he says, in short, extremes are for us as if they were not, and we are not within their notice. They escape us, or we them. And he tells us, this is what makes us incapable of certain knowledge, but it also makes us incapable of absolute ignorance. So we are positioned not only between the nothing and the everything, the infinitely small and the infinitely great, we are also positioned between complete ignorance and absolute knowledge. And that is the best that we can expect. So notice, we can talk about these two infinites. We can extend our imagination to them. We can, in fact, contemplate them. And Pascal is suggesting that we ought to do that. But we will never be able, in his view, to comprehend them. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.